Okay, good afternoon, everybody. So this is the beginning. It's really a continuation of a series that I started over the summer called Poskim and Psakim, where we try to take a look at different great Poskim and some of their critical and most famous Piskei Halacha, and gives us hopefully an appreciation of different great Gedolim throughout the ages. But this is the first one of this series that's being shared with the as part of the program here in the Young Israel of Century City Zoom, which we're going to be doing once a month, Be'ezras Hashem, over the course of this year, continuing what we've been doing over the course of the past several years, having a once-a-month Zoom for the community of the Young Israel Century City, where everybody, of course, is invited to attend. So today we're going to talk about Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger is a fascinating and very, very important posek in Jewish history. Much of the information that I'm going to be sharing with you, I got from listening to Rav Aaron Lapiansky talk about Rav Shlomo Kluger, and many of the Piskei Halacha were just from what I've come across over the years. So I can't say that the Piskei Halacha are necessarily the most important Piskei Halacha of Rav Shlomo Kluger, but they're the ones that stick out in my mind after years of learning and hearing and seeing Rav Shlomo Kluger quoted, and or actually seeing his svarim, his many, many different svarim, in different contexts. So let's start with a little bit of biographical information. Rav Shlomo Kluger was born in a poor part of the Ukraine. He was born in 1786. He was named originally Shlomo Yaakov Yosef, but then he got sick as a young boy, and they took away the names Yaakov Yosef. Highly unusual. Normally, we add a name for a chola. In this case, they took away two of his names, and therefore he's left just as Rav Shlomo Kluger. He was an absolutely brilliant child prodigy. He was Mechadish Chidushim at the age of six. He had lightning fast tfisa. His father died at his bar mitzvah, and he begged his mother to send him to yeshiva, which she did. But he quickly outgrew that yeshiva and went out to learn on his own. The Dubna Magid was a big influence on him. He learned Agadata and Drush with the Dubna Magid when he was still a child. His primary Rebbeim pretty much died when he was 15 years old. So for the most part, he was an autodidact. He really taught himself a lot. He married at the age of 17 into a prestigious rabbinic family, and he was supported to learn all day. He learned 18 hours a day. He didn't interact with people very much. His father-in-law died, and then his mother-in-law continued to support the young couple. When she died, so now the young couple had to support themselves. But he didn't really want to become a rav, because he didn't want to be bothered by people. He was not a very social person. He was more interested in just learning and writing and writing and writing. He wrote hundreds of svarim, and that is not an exaggeration. So in order to support himself, he ran a small business, and he was a terrible businessman. He was always thinking and learning. He would undercharge people, and he just didn't do a good job. Once a person came in and bought up half the store, but he was thinking in the sugya of Takanas Usha, so he forgot to ask for payment. He went back home and he told his wife that, guess what, we sold half of our stock today. She was thrilled. She said, okay, so where's the money? But he then realized that he had forgotten to ask for the money. His wife was very unhappy with him and sent him to go find the person who took half of their stuff so he can get the payment. On the way to go look for this man, he saw an entire delegation of people who stopped and asked where he is going, and he informed he asked where they're going, and they informed him that a group from Kulkova is here to look for a new Rav. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that city name correctly. So he took this as a simon min hashamayim that he had to accept the Rabbanus, because as he was looking to get paid for the business mistake that he had made, he ran into this delegation that was inviting him to be a Rav. So he took the Rabbanus in Kulkova, which was in Galicia, and the day he arrived there, the person who owed him the money actually brought him the money, and he was the Rav there. He became a Rav for the rest of his life, but not there for the rest of his life. In 1820, he became a Rav in Brut, which was a very important city. It was very famous for its klois. They didn't have formal yeshivas back in those days, but instead, in places where people valued learning, they had a klois where people would get together and learning, and in Brut, the smartest people came to learn. It was a gathering of the biggest Talmid Chacham in all of Galicia, and the Arisha B'Chabura, the most brilliant Talmid Chacham in the town, was a Yid by the name of Rav Ephraim Zalman Margolios, who was a wealthy businessman. Rav Shechter always uses him as the example of sometimes the Balabatim know how to learn better than the Rabbanim. Rav Ephraim Zalman Margolios was a Balabas, and he knew how to learn better than all the Rabbanim. And he was the author of the Matah Ephraim, which is a classic work on the Halachos of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkos, and also the Shaar Ephraim on Kriyas HaTorah, and the Tshuvas Beis Ephraim. He was the most respected person in the entire community, and he loved Rav Shlomo Kluger. He appreciated his genius in Torah, and he pushed Rav Shlomo Kluger in to be the Rav in Brat. Rav Shlomo Kluger was very withdrawn and certainly didn't market himself. His grandson ultimately wrote the story of his life, and that's how we know so much about him. We often hire Rabbanim who we are inspired by, or will develop creative programming, will connect with people, will be good, you know, in end-of-life situations and illnesses and things like that. In places like Brat, they had a tremendous pride in Torah scholarship. They were looking for a crown jewel of a Talmud Chacham. They didn't care if he wasn't available to them because he was learning 18 hours a day or that he didn't speak much. They wanted a huge Talmud Chacham. There was also a certain kinah sofim that everybody thought that they could be as big as the Rav. It took a lot of work, and Ephraim Zalman Margolios brought in Rav Shlomo Kluger as that crown jewel. And on his first day, they tested him by having 100 people bring him shailas that weren't actually lemaisa, just to test him. That's what they were interested in, to see his sharpness in learning. And he stayed there pretty much the rest of his life. So some of the stories of his leadership and the travails that he faced included the following. You know, his lifestyle was very simple. He had no hanas olam hazeh. He woke up at chatzos every night. He did tikkun chatzos and then said all of Tehillim and then learned and davened and taught Talmidim. He wrote prolifically over 150 svarim. He was a mayan, a meskaber of chidushei Torah. He never seemed to run out of Torah. He also had to be available for communal in Yanim every now and then, like shailos and dinei Torah. As long as Rav Chaim Zalman Margolios was alive, he had a defender, and he had somebody who would take care of the bigger things in the community. In 1829, Rav Chaim Zalman Margolios was nifter, and Rav Shlomo Kluger had to get much more heavily involved in communal matters. And he was not at all diplomatic. He was very blunt. He was very unafraid of people. He wouldn't make it today in Rabbanus, Rav Shlomo Kluger. He was just too straightforward, too blunt, too direct with people. There was a mitzvah that happened after Ephraim Zalman Margolios. Welcome, Rabbi Muskin. Thank you for joining and Mazel Tov in the bris. There was a mitzvah that happened after Ephraim Zalman Margolios was nifter, where a man died without children and he had no known siblings. So that would mean that there's no need for chalitza because there were no siblings. The mother-in-law said that she once had another son and had gone away, and therefore the almana is naguna, meaning the man who had died, his mother said that, there is a brother, and he's far, far away, and you just don't know where he is. And that made the daughter-in-law naguna, because she needs a chalitza. Rav Shlomo Kluger listened to the case, and he paskined that there's no chashash, she can get married without a problem. People in town started murmuring that he was matir yivam l'shuk, how could he do this? He made an effort to get letters from all the gedolei ador, like Rabbi Kiveger and the Chassam Sofer and the Shvus Yaakov, to support him, but people took sides and it caused him great aggravation. In the end, the woman got married. She had been married twice before and never had kids, and now she had a child from her new husband, which people took as a mofes, as a simon min hashamayim, that Rav Shlomo Kluger was correct, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had his back by making such a clear demonstration of the correctness of his psak. Another case, in 1831, a couple of years after Ephraim Zalman Margolios passed away, there was an epidemic. Many of the tshuvas that were written about that epidemic were used more recently during COVID as a precedent for a lot of what we were doing. And it was a terrible magefa. Lots of people were dying, and the wealthy people got together, and they made a takana that since tachrichin were expensive, they would just bury poor people in their regular clothing. Rav Shlomo Kluger was furious. He didn't know who was behind it, but he went to the wealthiest person in town, who was his staunchest supporter at the time, and likely the source of his income at the time, and he barged in and he just let loose on the guy. The person was shocked. He didn't know how to react. He wasn't used to being spoken to like that. The person was shaking with rage, but he bit his lip and he didn't answer back. Imagine that kind of kavanah rabbanus, that the Rav comes in, you know, with screaming and yelling and accusing without any clear clear evidence, and the person just bit his lip because he was the Rav. That night, this wealthy person started getting sick, and he took it as a simon shemayim that he had to do something about where Rav Shlomo Kluger was complaining about. He donated all the money that was needed to pay for all the tachrichin the next day. Rav Shlomo Kluger didn't like taking money from people, especially if he thought there was an agenda. A man would send an amount of gold for Purim gelt each year, and one year he sent six times that amount. Rav Shlomo Kluger sent back the extra five pieces of gold, suspicious that the guy wanted something from him, and sure enough, a week later, the person said he was importing rum for Pesach, and he wanted a hechsher from Shlomo Kluger. So Shlomo Kluger refused the hechsher. He smelled a rat immediately, and he didn't take the money. Another difficult parsha for him relating to halacha was that he was very, very strict, and he's very much of the mindset of what we call Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, that didn't like any changes in Minhagim. Berdichev had a shochet who was producing an impossible percentage of kosher behemos, and who would stick his hand in first to smash any sirchos on the lungs, and had a habit of also drinking on the job, so his hand wasn't so steady all the time. It was a big problem they had with their shochetim. This is not a new story. Different places throughout history, there have been problems with shochetim where Abadim had to be called in to assess the expertise and the seriousness with which the shochetim took their jobs and the integrity with which they practiced. So the butchers who were wealthy and powerful loved and supported this guy, and others wanted him fired. So they had to do something about all these tainas against him. So they called Rav Shlomo Kluger into Paskin, but only on condition that he watched the shochet shecht a few times without giving any tshuva immediately. And then when we get back to Galicia, he can then give an impartial evaluation. So that was the deal. So he came down to Berdichev, and he watched this shochet work for 3 days. He didn't think he needed any more than 3 days. He said that he saw 130 shchitos, and he writes very poetically, v'kal lahavin, kal kuf lamed is gematria 130. So he says it was 130 was enough to be maven, to understand what was going on. He was absolutely poker-faced the whole time, didn't give any indication of which way he was leaning, and he didn't leave right away. He got somebody to take him out of town at 4 a.m. because he had an intuition that if he stayed longer, something was going to happen, and he had to get out of there. The Shochet supporters were under the impression that the Psak wouldn't be good, so they had police ready to arrest him the next morning, when everyone woke up. He got out in time and managed to avoid arrest. And he then later sent a letter that the meat was takatreif and that no one could rely on that shochet. Another parsha that he was very against was a proposed change by the Chevra Kadisha to carry niftarim on a wagon, where the previous minhag was to carry a niftar on a stretcher, people carrying him on their shoulders. And they said, why should we schlep him on the shoulders? We'll bring him in a wagon. Like, now we have a hearse that you put the niftar in, so why can't we just carry him on a wagon? So they bought a wagon and a horse, and only then, after they bought a wagon and a horse, they asked if they can use it. They already invested in the wagon. Then they asked the Shaila, are we allowed to use it? And he said, absolutely not. It's not the way we ever did it. And the main reason he said no was probably because they were borrowing whatever was fashionable in society. And he was a big kanai, and he felt that modernization in shul in Yanim and in kihila in Yanim leads to bad results. And he wrote a tshuva on it, and he had fascinating halachic insights. His genius, and you really see through this tshuva, is in bringing maramakomos that may not be exact, because who's going to talk about schlepping a dead body by a horse and wagon or by a car? That was never a discussion. But certain things you would never have thought to apply. Like, he would come up with tangential makoros that you would never think to apply to the situation. Sometimes there are no clear makoros, so you look for the closest place. Rav Avadia Yosef does that a lot, happens to me. So he brought proofs from carrying the aron, b'kasef yisau. So he said, oh, you see, it's derech kavod to carry something on your shoulders, something like that. What does the aron have to do with the dead body? But it shows that this general sense of kavod by carrying on your shoulders. The Gemara speaks about a certain sandal not to wear at a levaya, because you may have to fix it and it will delay the burial. So here too, the wagon might break down. Anything that will delay the burial, so wagon could break down and the wheel could come off, and then you're fixing a flat for 2 hours, and then it delays the burial. So these are the kinds of makoros that he used. The Chevra Kedisha went ahead with it anyway. They ignored his psak. They took a mace, and the Chevra had a government injunction to allow it. Rav Shlomo Kluger couldn't stop them. Rav Shlomo Kluger walked around barefoot as a sign of avelus that they were ruining the halacha. The people taking the niftar out saw blood come out of the coffin, and it created a huge ruckus and a riot. At the end of the day, they discontinued the usage of the wagon because they took that also as a simon min hashamayim. Interestingly, many years later, there was a shaila in Europe whether they can use a car to carry the niftar, and the tshuva was from the gedolim of that time, what do you mean, the dari daris, we've been using a horse and a wagon. And, you know, eventually, you know, things change over time, obviously, but at those inflection points of change, you know, there's a healthy pushback at those inflection points of change. He was asked a shaila by the Austro-Hungarian government. All members of the parliament were sworn in using a Bible, but Jews would swear on a Chumash. So the judge said that in Chumash, the Aseres Dibros are on several different pages. So they wanted to know if the Shavua is Chal, even though the person only places his hand on one of the pages. So he's dealing with these kinds of shailas also from the government to Paskin for them as well. The biggest controversy he was involved in was about machine matzahs. He was extremely sharply against using machine matzahs. In Germany, they started making machine matzahs from Shlomo Kluger, fire and brimstone against it. There was a big split. The Divrei Chaim and the Chiddush HaRim were very against it. He had many reasons to be against it, including taking away Parnassa from the matzah bakeries. Sholem Eishiv was very much in favor of the machine matzos, and the Sholem Eishiv was what really, probably the Posek Hadar at the time, and he wrote tshuvas against Rav Shlomo Kluger. It really caused a strain in their relationship for quite some time. The most painful parsha in his life, though, is explained in the Hakdama to his Sefer on Nedarim. Dafyomi's learning Nedarim now. You probably hear in the various Dafyomi Shirim a Sefer called Nidrei Zruzin that's quoted all the time. That is Rav Shlomo Kluger's Sefer on Nedarim. It is a classic on Nedarim. In the Hakdama to that Sefer on Nedarim, he talks about a 22-year-old granddaughter that he had who had died. And he said that what happened was they made a shidduch that they thought was a very good shidduch with another family, with a young man. And it turned out that other family, which in the Sefer he names by name who that family is, that they were terrible people. They caused his granddaughter nothing but grief. She got sick and they didn't treat her and they didn't care for her. Rav Shlomo Kluger had to on his own go and find doctors and send the doctors to the city where she was, and she died after 3 weeks. And he says that family should be cursed forever, and that anybody who knew about the true character of that family and didn't tell them about it should be cursed forever. He was a very straightforward and sharp person. And he writes, this is all printed in the Hakdama to the Nidrei Zruzin. He asked that people should learn Mishnayos on his granddaughter's yahrzeit. Apparently this granddaughter had a very special place in his heart. They say that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach used to do it. He used to learn Mishnayos on this granddaughter of Rav Shlomo Kluger's yahrzeit based on the request of Rav Shlomo Kluger. After the Chasam Sofer and the Chemda Shlomo died in 1840, Rav Shlomo Kluger was the address for Piskei Halacha. He'd get 30, 40 shailas a day by mail and was just writing tshuvas all day. He died in 1869. He had lots of descendants by the last name Kluger or the last name Mahershak, because Moreno Rav Shlomo Kluger, so they took that as a last name. There's a Dr. Marashak who ran a Mizrahi high school in Eretz Yisrael. There's a famous ENT doctor. There's an Israeli news anchorman, Rabbi Lapiansky pointed out, by the name of Chaim Yavin. Yavin is really Kluger. Kluger means smart, right? So the Yavin in Hebrew is Kluger. Chaim Yavin is about as far left and anti-religious as you can be. Whatever, he's a descendant of Rav Shlomo Kluger. He has many Talmid Chacham's descendants also. Yeah, he was a master of Kala Torah Kula. His style is not so popular in yeshivas because it's not the precision type of analysis that we typically do in yeshivas, but many of his Sfarim are popular just because he had so many Sfarim and he was so impactful in his time. So let me share with you some of his Torah thoughts and Piskei Halacha that just came to mind when I think of Rav Shlomo Kluger. The first thing that comes to mind when I think of Rav Shlomo Kluger is his comment about Kiddush Levana. I remember the first year that the DRS high school existed, Rabbi Kamenetsky had asked Rav Naftali Yeager from Shai Yashuv to speak at a Shalosh Shudas that they were having on a DRS Shabbaton. And Rav Yeager wanted to show what was then a school of just ninth graders a little bit of a geschmack in learning, that they could feel the sense of the joy and the excitement of learning. And what he chose to share with them was a comment of Rav Shlomo Kluger in the Chachma Shlomo on Or Chaim Simin Tav Chav Vav, which is about Kiddush Levana, that and he spoke specifically about whether women should be obligated in Kiddush Levana. So right away the Talmidim said Kiddush Levana Mitzvah Saseh Shazman Grama. So of course women should be pater from Kiddush Levana. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger in the Chachma Shlomo and Or Chaim Simin Tav Chav Vav. What does Kiddush Levana have to do with Mitzvah Shazman Grama? He says, because, what do you mean? How could it not be Mitzvah? I would think it's the prototypical example of Mitzvah Shazman Grama. He says, no. The klal ze lo nema rak b'mitzvah d'guf ha-mitzvah shaycha tamid b'chol dinim kol zman. When do we say something is Mitzvah Shazman Grama? That's when the mitzvah is available always. It's always constantly available for you to do that action. It's just that you only get credit for a mitzvah at certain times. That's what it means, Zman Grama. Meaning, I could eat matzah today, I'm just not going to get any credit for it. I could shake a lulav today, it's just not going to be meaningful today. But it's always available, it's always there. It's just that the mitzvah, the idea that it becomes a mitzvah, is Zman Grama. He says, when it comes to matzah, sukkah, lulav, and chadoma, the mitzvah zu efshel iskai in b'cheshvan kamo b'tishrei. You could do these mitzvahs in cheshvan the same way you do them in tishrei. V'iyar kamo b'nisan. And still the Torah says, no, these are the days you do them, and other days there is no kiyum ha-mitzvah. But b'levana, atu havla minia mikoach hazman, zev minia mikuf ha-mitzvah shelo shaycha az. The reason that we don't say Kiddush Levana all the time is because you need a new moon. And we don't always have a new moon. So that's not Zman Grama. That's new moon Grama. That's not called Zman Grama. The presence of the new moon is dependent on Zman, meaning that's the way Hashem runs the world, that it comes at the beginning of each month. Yeah, but still, that's not directly related to Zman. That's directly related to the presence of the new moon. And if God were to run the world differently and were to shift it, that the new moon appears at a different time, so Nahalacha would be different. And that's how, by the way, they use that Rav Shlomo Kluger to explain a very strange passage in the Ramban on Maseches Kiddushin. The Ramban in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Gimel, the Ramban writes that Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah saseh she'ein azman grama. So everyone wonders, what are you talking about? Sfiras HaOmer is only from Tes Zayin Nisan until Shavuos. Ein zman grama yosr mizeh? I would think that's the ultimate zman grama. So the Acharonim say that no, Sfiras HaOmer is triggered by the Korban Omer. Now the Korban Omer may be zman grama because you only bring it on the second day of Pesach, but it's not the zman of second day of Pesach that triggers the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, especially if you assume Sfiras HaOmer nowadays without a Korban Omer is only Drabanan. It's the Korban that triggers the Sfiras HaOmer. So that's why that's how they explain that Ramban based on that comment of Rav Shlomo Kluger. Another famous comment of Rav Shlomo Kluger that is often quoted is that when it comes to Shalashuddis on Shabbos, also relating to women, are women obligated in Shalashuddis? So we don't find a single daya in Rishonim that says that women are exempt from eating Shalashuddis. And yet, it seems, just if you look around, that a lot of women don't eat Shalashuddis for whatever reason. A lot of men don't either, but it seems a higher percentage of women don't eat Shalashuddis than of men that don't eat Shalashuddis. And why would that be the case? After all Rishonim hold that women are chayiv in Shalashuddis. So Shlomo Kluger says, well, let's take a step back. Why do the Rishonim say women are chayiv in Shalashuddis? After all, isn't Shalashuddis a mitzvah saseh shazman grama? So if it's mitzvah shazman grama, women should be potter. So the Ran writes in Masechta Shabbos and Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph B'Dapei Ariv, in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, that women are chayiv in Shalashuddis and in Lechem Mishnah because afhein hayu ba'osu anes. that they were included in the Nes of the Man, and whenever there's a Mitzvah Shazman Grama, where women were also either the Iker part of the Nes or included in the Nes, they also have that mitzvah. So since Shalashudis, three meals on Shabbos is a zecher to the Man, and women also benefited from the Man, Afein Ha'ibosa Nes. The Ran writes about Rabbeinu Tam, though, about this comment of Rabbeinu Tam, Ve'in Sarech. You don't need Afein Ha'ibosa Nes over here. Shabbachol Maisa Shabbos Ishvi Isha Shavin, Kidi Alfinun Mizachar V'Shamar. He says, no, you know why women are chayiv in Shalashudis? Because women are chayiv in all the mitzvahs asay of Shabbos. With the Gemara Darshans and Shavuos Tavchav and Brachos Tavchav, that there's a hekesh between Zachar as Yom HaShabbos Zakatcho, which means to do Kiddush, and Shomer as Yom HaShabbos Zakatcho, which means to not do Malacha on Shabbos. And we darshan kol sheyeshno b'shamar, anyone who's not allowed to do malach on Shabbos, which is every Jew, men and women included, yeshno b'zachar is included in the mitzvah of kiddush on Shabbos. So the Ran writes, doesn't just mean kiddush, it means all the mitzvahs I say of Shabbos. It's inclusive of Seudos Shabbos and Lechem Mishnah, Shalashudis, right? It's included, inclusive of all those things. And that's why women are chayiv in Shalashudis. Shibale Aleket gives a different reason. He says, "Nir be'enai sha'al kulam uomer echlu ayom ubein anashim be'nashim nisrabu ba'achilazu." That if you look in the parsha in the Torah of echlu ayom, where we learn Shalashudis from, it seems to be addressing both men and women. There are other suggestions as well as to why women are chayiv in Shalashudis. Comes along Rav Shlomo Kluger and he says, oh, now I understand why women don't eat Shalashudis. What? We just went through why, you know, all these different reasons why women are absolutely chayiv in Shalashudis. So he says, because obviously, if there is a machlokas rishonim as to whether we apply kol sheyeshno b'shmira yeshno b'zechira to Shalashudis, or whether we apply afein ha'ibosa anes to Shalashudis, that means half the rishonim think that you can't apply afein ha'ibosa anes to Shalashudis. And half the Rishonim think that you can't apply kol sheyeshno b'shmira yeshno b'zechira to Shalashudis. So it's plausible that one would hold that the reason of kol sheyeshno b'shmira yeshno b'zechira doesn't apply for Shalashudis, for women in Shalashudis. And you could also hold that afein ha'ibosa anes doesn't apply. Meaning, once I know that the Rabbeinu Tam doesn't hold of the reason of kol sheyeshno b'shmira yeshno b'zechira, and the Ran doesn't hold of the reason of afein ha'ibosa anes, it's a plausible approach to say, I agree with Rabbeinu Tam that kol sheyeshno b'shmira yeshno b'zechira is not true in this case, and I agree with the Ran that afein ha'ibosa anes is not true, and therefore what I'm left with is just a regular mitzvah shazman grama, which women are potter from. So that's a bit of a funny analysis. Rav Avadya Yosef writes in the Tshuva, in Yechaveh Das, Chelek Dalet, Simen Chafei, he says, "Udvariv t'muim ma'od." That's against the rules. You can't take something that the Rishonim all agree la halacha, you know, what the halacha is, and they just try to work on why and how we got there, and then say, oh, I agree with this Rishon that every other Rishon is wrong, and I agree with that Rishon that the first Rishon is wrong, and therefore all the Rishonim are wrong, and therefore a woman's going to be pater from Shalashudis. Obviously, in Shulchan Aruch, we pass Nashim Chayavos B'Suda Shlishis. There's nothing to really talk about. Women are chayav in Shalashudis, but this is, you know, one of Shlomo Kluger's Piskei Halacha that came to mind. The machine matzah one also is a very big one. It's a very big psak halacha. And one final one that I'll share with you is he has a number of tshuvas about suicide. In the tshuva sefer Ha'elav L'Chashloma, which is a unique sefer because he didn't actually write it. Ha'elav L'Chashloma, they took 1,000 of his long, he wrote these long, long tshuvas. So someone decided to do a tova for Klal Yisrael and took 1,000 of his tshuvas and condensed them and made them into nice short paragraphs that are easy to read. So they called that sefer Ha'elav L'Chashloma, the 1,000 tshuvas that are summarized by Rav Shlomo Kluger. So in Ha'elav L'Chashlomo, Simon Shin Aleph, he describes a case that a person owed money to lots of different people, and in his distress, he tried to slit his own throat. But his son found him and pulled the knife away last minute, but he had cut himself. And the doctor said that the wound would heal in 10 days' time. The guy ended up dying within 10 days' time, but he didn't die on the spot. And he had a chance to say vidui before dying. And he wanted to know, should the person be considered a ma'aved atzmo ledas? Suicide, the halach in Shulchan Aruch is that under certain circumstances where one commits suicide, there is no avelus that is observed for such a person. So Shlomo Kluger responds that of course he doesn't have the status of Ma'avir Atzmo L'das, because how could you forget the most basic halacha of Ma'avir Atzmo L'das, and that is that the person has to announce first in advance that it's that he's committing suicide and that he's trying to kill himself. If this person didn't announce it in advance, then he's not a Ma'avir Atzmo L'das. He admitted it afterwards that's exactly what he was trying to do. You don't trust him what he says afterwards. He's not believed to say that he's a Rasha. He then says that there are two other reasons that the person shouldn't be considered a Ma'avir Atzmo L'das. First, because he owed a lot of money, and Chazal say that owing lots of money is like being doubly punished with Eish Umayim already, which is worse than Misa. So, typically, people who owe money, they put people like that in jail nowadays, and captivity is the worst kind of Yisurin. So he said that person is like Shaul HaMelech, that he's an Anus, and he's therefore not considered Ma'avir Atzmo L'das, which is, by the way, usually why it is that we've never heard of such a situation where you don't observe Avelus for suicide victims. We always do. The person was almost always anus by something, by some terrible depression, some sort of terrible situation. And second of all, Shlomo Kluger writes that it was a failed suicide attempt. How could you call him Ma'avir Atzmo L'das? He didn't die from the suicide attempt. He died later. And especially since he had the chance to do vidui between the attempt and the actual Misa. So that also stuck out in my mind as another example of a psak, of a famous psak of Rav Shlomo Kluger. Okay, thank you so much for joining us today, and looking forward to future shiurim.
We want to thank Rabbi Leibowitz. The next shiur in this series is Sunday, December 18th. Bezrat Hashem.
Big Yasha
Karach.
Thank you.
Rabbi Leibowitz, can you stay on for a few moments after?
Sure.